United States v. Saxenmeier. Mr. Brandt.
Good morning, Your Honors. Jeff Brandt on behalf of Mr. Saxenmeier. Mr. Saxenmeier has a difficult case before you this morning. What made and makes it worth taking, as from defense counsel's point of view, was the punishment versus the crime, what we viewed as an incredible imbalance between what he was convicted of following trial and the sentence he received. There's no doubt that Mr. Saxenmeier was amenable to what the government charged him with. It'd be silly for me to stand up in front of this court and say that at no point did Mr. Saxenmeier have any relationship to cocaine. He was one of four or five people in this small Wisconsin town that were known to use cocaine. It would also be silly to say that this is some kind of slam dunk that I have before you about insufficiency of the evidence. It is anything but Mr. Saxenmeier, and to use the colloquialism of his mother, we got to try something. So we've put together a suppression argument that, although Mr. Saxenmeier doesn't permit me to concede anything, I must say that the government's response on that issue is very strong. That's why we didn't address it in the reply brief. But we've asked the court to review the sufficiency of the two convictions because Mr. Saxenmeier feels they're very close calls. He hopes Your Honors feel the same. Barring any questions from the court, we'd like to address what we feel is our strongest argument, and that deals with whether the sentence is reasonable. A part of that argument, and only a part, not the full argument, boldly submits, especially with this panel, two of the judges were authors of the Mikituik decision, to submit that standard of review, although very different in procedurally how it was before Booker, puts district courts very much in a situation like a pre-Booker sentencing system.
The only problem with that argument, in addition to the fact that we've rejected it a lot, but and certainly you're entitled to preserve it, is if you look at the studies that have been done of sentencing across the country since Booker was decided, and they cover all the different circuits, show that post-Booker, the district court judges indeed give sentences that are not within the guideline range, sometimes below the range, sometimes above the range. And so Booker, in this circuit as well as in many others, you know, in all of the other circuits, has done exactly what the Supreme Court said it should do. The guidelines are still there. They still have to be referred to, but the district judges have discretion. And our court has tried to articulate ways in which non-guideline sentences should be viewed, guideline sentences should be viewed. And if the Supreme Court decides to take the case, I mean, we'll see if all of these different verbal formulas really amount to much in the end. But I certainly don't think it takes you to the pre-Booker world. I mean, just witness the number of sentences we've affirmed that are non-guideline sentences.
And I'm familiar with those numbers, Your Honor, and I note that they're very similar to pre-Booker numbers if you change the terminology. If instead of being non-guideline sentence, we call them departures.
No, I think they're different. I'm not sure I agree with that.
You know, the presumption in Mikituik, that's a presumption about appellate review. And we have been emphatic that district judges are not permitted to presume that the guideline sentence is correct as soon as a defendant says that one of the statutory sentencing factors points to a non-guideline sentence.
And I must concede, Your Honor, that is a significant difference between the pre- and the post-Booker. That's why we've basically resorted to say the overall practical effect after appeal is much like the pre-Booker.
If you have the Sentencing Commission with, you know, a staff and experience and so on, it's natural that district judges would think that, and they're very detailed, and they take account of many of the contingencies that arise in particular cases, it would be natural to expect the judges generally to adhere to those sentences.
And it's in their comfort zone. How many years did same district judges
to get accustomed? Right, they weren't going to have the rug pulled out from under them.
And I commend the district judges for that. Even if I, without making that additional legal argument on what the standard should be, we submit that the sentence is unreasonable. Under these circumstances, there's no doubt that he was sentenced substantially based upon his past. There's nothing I can do about that. I think the record, to kind of jump on that instead of try to run away from that, I think here's a man who's 43 years old, has told the probation officer, I had a great childhood, I was a great kid, and then somebody introduced me to cocaine, and it all went downhill. And we look at his PSR, and if it's not driving while intoxicated, it's disorderly conduct. And you read the PSR closely, I think it doesn't take a crystal ball to figure out that the disorderly conduct's probably got something to do with the drugs he's taking. The question is 21 and a half, a little bit more, years, a reasonable sentence for a crime that involved, or two crimes that involved 2 grams of cocaine? I must apologize.
The problem with these drug dealers is that if they're not put away for a long time, they go right back into the business, right?
This is rhetorical, but can we sentence him for 3 or 4 or 5 years and then say, and now this is his first time in federal prison. Maybe it works this time, maybe not. But after that, can we say as a part of the federal system, and now 3 or 4 or 5 years in nothing but treatment? Because if the federal government's solution to Mr. Saxonmeyer and those like him is let's dry him out, is 21 and a half years?
No, I don't think it's that. I think the idea is to imprison these people until they've lost their energy for criminal act for the drug business. I mean, realistically, I think that's what is involved. Unfortunate, but I think that's the theory.
And I don't know to piggyback on that statement, Your Honor. Then, can we make a difference between those that are soft spoken and there's no violence, and those who are violent in those years of criminal activity?
You know, nonviolent drug crimes are very serious, right? So we're bound by that.
Right, and that's where I wanted to follow up in a similar point. It does sound to me like the argument you're making is one that fundamentally disagrees with the congressional policy on drugs, and there's plenty of literature out there that would back you up on that. But we've had cases, whether it's about the crack powder ratio or so on, that have indicated that we at least perceive ourselves to be constrained, and the district judges are not, because of Booker. Now in a world where they can just disagree with legislative policies.
I would submit at least a part that it is that what we're asking for and the review we're asking for has something to do with what Congress has asked for in saying sufficient but not greater than necessary.
Right.
And is there a lot of gray area there? Of course I've got to admit there's a lot of gray area there. But if we're going to look at the 3553 factors, we've got deterrence down. And we look at history and characteristics. We got one check for me and one check against me. When it comes to history, well, criminal history, that's not so good. But characteristics, maybe we have something here good. Maybe, the gentleman cocaine provider at parties or something like that. And I don't mean to make light of it. There's no doubt that this is serious. And then maybe for unwarranted disparity, I get a check mark again for me. But we do submit that in light of all the factors here, even if we don't challenge the case that this court has already held regarding sentencing, that the sentence is unreasonable, and we thank the court for its time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Brand. Ms. Altman?
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Elizabeth Altman, and I represent the United States in this case. The defendant started out in his briefs challenging the denial of his motion to suppress statements, the guilty verdict on the charges against him, and his sentence. None of these arguments have merit, and I was prepared to address them all briefly today. If the court is mainly interested...
He didn't raise them in his argument, so why don't you confine yourself to the sentencing issue unless other judges have questions?
With regard to the sentence, was at the low end of the advisory guideline range. It was 262 months when the range was 262 to 327. This court has already determined in McAtuck that this sentence is presumptively reasonable. And as this court noted, it's found several times, many times, that McAtuck does not need, that it does not undo Booker, and that it does not need to be revisited. The defendant hasn't provided any factors which would rebut the presumption of reasonableness. He hasn't claimed anything extraordinary or out of the ordinary as far as sentencing factors that would make his sentence of 262 months unreasonable. He makes some argument about the amount of drugs involved in these crimes. However, the guideline range was determined knowing the amount of drugs involved in these crimes. In sentencing the defendant, the judge found that he had a lengthy involvement in the criminal justice system dating back to when he was a juvenile. His criminal record starts at the age of 18. He has three or four convictions, prior convictions for selling drugs. He has been sentenced in state court to a term of 3 years and to a term of 8 years. He was sentenced to a term of prison terms were 3 years and 5 years, and there was a term of probation of 8 years, which involved alcohol treatment. So he has seen sentences of shorter terms, and they've had no effect on him.
But, of course, the main driver of his sentence is, in fact, his history.
Yes, it is.
It's not the amounts here. And I guess you're saying that even for an individual, you don't think there's any way somebody can argue that addiction and the like are individual factors that would dictate a significantly lower sentence than practically the rest of the person's life.
Well, I believe this court has addressed whether or not addiction is a factor in Boscarino and held that it's not. It may be an individual case.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's certainly post-Booker, a particular individual's pattern of addiction, mental illness. There are all sorts of addicts. They aren't a monolithic group. Some people have other mental illnesses that go along with it. Other people maybe not. You know, maybe the severity of addiction, maybe the number of times they've tried to get over it in the past and haven't. I mean, there are all kinds of individual factors.
Absolutely.
And those are all on the table now, post-Booker.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the court considered what it had before it when it determined that it was going to sentence him to 262 months. It may be that had she imposed a different sentence based on those factors, based on his addictions, and based on the fact that he may have had a hard life, that sentence would be reasonable too. But based on the arguments and the factors and what she had before her, the district court found that 262 months was an appropriate sentence for this person. Some of the other factors that the court considered was that he committed new violations within months of being released from prior terms of imprisonment. I believe that these offenses were committed almost instantaneously upon his release. He was on parole when he committed these offenses, and he involved his son in his offense. The district court considered the factors, and as like you said, Judge Wood, had she imposed a sentence that was lower, perhaps that would have been reasonable also. But based on what was before the district court, it imposed this sentence. It is reasonable, and I request that it be affirmed.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Altman. Mr. Brad, do you have anything further?
I wrote down the sentences, so I'll speak them. We believe this certainly is a special case, that factors do exist here, and that those are the same arguments that were put forth in the district court. We're not raising factors that were not before the district court. They're the same ones. And we submit that the district court, the sentence, in light of those several 3553 factors, created an unreasonable sentence.
Well, thank you, Mr. Brand. You were appointed, were you not? You were appointed?
Your Honor.
You're not appointed.
Oh, thank you.
Well, we thank you anyway. And court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.